Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 12:56 p.m. That is Pacific Standard Time, and today is December 17th. Well, in here today we had some pretty dynamic moves on the downside, and the S&P 500 has closed at a new low. So this is a clear breakdown, and it would need to be reversed quickly. Well, there is certainly the potential for a catalyst on Wednesday. And that is something that the market is very keenly watching. Well, if we look at the S&P 500, it has fallen from 2,800 points to 2,536 in the space of 17 days, which is approximately 2 weeks in terms of market activity. So anyone with eyes can see there's a short-term oversold condition evident. And if one were to look at stochastics, there's also a long-term oversold condition evident on the long-term stochastics. But here's where things get murky. There is on the bullish side, we know that there is certainly that the sentiment is terrible, that there has been a lot of selling pressure already. That when we look at, for example, the sentiment with regard to just about any way you wish to measure it, for example, AAII has got this template, and we can see that sentiment is as at least as bad as it was back in 2015 and 2016 or 2012 before that. So that's certainly telling us that there's a lot of bad news here, and obviously with the market pulling back in such a manner, that's obviously going to be weighing on sentiment. And the hammer is falling hardest on some of the instruments that have been among the best performers. So for example, when we look at the Nasdaq, well, the Nasdaq 100 is also pulling back in here. It was at another new reaction low. And this has not quite taken out the February low, not least because it had rallied so much more from the February low. But this is a new reaction low for this downtrend, and we also have a very clear succession of lower rally highs. The big question is what is going to happen in terms of the Fed's balance sheet. When we look at the chart of the Fed's balance sheet, then the contraction started in earnest at the beginning of this year. And despite the fact that if we were to go back and look at the last 3 or 4 years, it hadn't really done much of anything, and stock markets were able to rally quite well. But it was when they started reducing the size of the balance sheet that's when things really started to bite. Then we also have the fact that the ECB has ended its quantitative easing program, and yet the European stock markets are reacting rather negatively, both to the fact that the economies are cooling, but also to the end of the stimulative measures. Well, the Bank of Japan and the People's Bank of China are both still engaged in monetary easing, but the pace of that easing has moderated considerably. Then, back in 2016, the ECB began its quantitative easing just when the Federal Reserve was ending its quantitative easing program. So that was an additional source of massive liquidity infusion into the markets that really helped to propel stock and asset prices higher. And I do want to stress asset prices because it's not simply stock markets. It's art prices. It's the sales of luxury vehicles, the sales of ships and boats, and then also asset prices like stocks, bonds. Whereas interest rates generally tend to have an effect on the economy, liquidity provision, like we've seen with quantitative easing, has been prolific in terms of its boosting of asset prices. So now that we have quantitative tightening, which is the removal of liquidity from the system, then that is something that is now weighing on asset prices. The DAX index in Germany is trending down. It has very clearly broken downwards from that head and shoulders top. And if one were to use very classical technical analysis, then having broken the neckline, then the chances are that it's going to at least pull back by the magnitude of the overhead range. So that would suggest about at least 2,000 points. So then the potential here is that it's going to come back at least to 10,000 before we see a reasonable bounce, but it has to at least push back above the trend mean. Then when we look at, for example, the FTSE 100 obviously is a very international index, almost a global index, but it has sustained its move below the 7,000 level, and that had been an area of support for many years. And the FTSE 250 is extending its decline below 18,000. So this is a trend in consistency. This is the largest pullback we've seen in quite some time. The banking sector is being rather heavily sanctioned by the removal of liquidity, and it was in negative territory in the USA again and here today. But that's certainly not a characteristic that is are individual to the USA. The UK banks were in negative territory. They have not yet moved to a new low, but this is still a downward trending environment. The European banking sector has been leading on the downside, and it was also in negative territory in here today. Then when we look at, for example, the Chinese banks, well, they were in mildly positive territory in here today. This is the lower side of the range. A move below today's low would break the sequence of higher reaction lows. Well, if we're looking for a potential candidate for the imposition of a new liquidity infusion program, then China is one of those that they have got some. There was news today that the Chinese Statistics Agency has delayed the release of some of their economic statistics. Now, part of the reason for that might be because it's just taking more time to get the data together, or it might be taking more time to massage the data. But the data is deteriorating, and that's certainly something that is going to be weighing on the Chinese stock market and the economy. But of course, China's stock market is state-sponsored. It wouldn't exist without the munificence of the Communist Party. Substantial parts of it are state-owned. And then you have the simple fact that the majority of the problems in the banking sector are in the unlisted sector, whereas the significantly, or the, sorry, the systemically important financial institutions are just about all listed and at least partially owned by the government. So they're the ones that are giving us the least amount of, or the, I think, the least see-through into the condition of the Chinese economy. When we look at, for example, the A-share index, well, it was just about steady in here, but it would need to sustain a move back above the 2,800 point level to really suggest that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Well, the fact of the matter is that asset prices remain under pressure. And that's because we have very clearly moved into a quantitative tightening mode with the end of the ECB's quantitative easing program. So the rate hike by the Fed on Wednesday is already priced into the market. And when we look at the 2-year yield, for example, on US Treasuries, well, it was contracting again in here today. It is certainly unwinding its oversold condition relative to the trend mean. But if the Fed decides to not raise interest rates tomorrow, and they would have some grounds for that considering the pressure that the stock market is under, that they may demur from raising interest rates, well, if that does in fact occur, well, then that could be a bullish catalyst. That would certainly help to put some I think to encourage some value investors, not least because forward PEs are back now where they were in 2015. They are no longer as aggressively priced as they were. That the US economy is still doing reasonably well. What you are starting to see is that the wealthiest households that account for a very substantial, almost 80% of the economy, are expressing a some negative sentiment, whereas the poorer households are still in fine fettle. Well, what that does suggest is that the consumer in the USA is very much attuned to what is going on with the stock market. What we also started to see in here today was that European retailers have been pulling back in an incredibly aggressive manner. That ASOS, for example, has been trending down for all of this year, but then it accelerated down in here today. And they are anticipating that their holiday season is not going to be very good. Well, what that suggests is that it's not so much about retail apocalypse, just that are brick and mortar apocalypse, but probably more about retail apocalypse. That when you have PMI figures that are deteriorating like they are right across Europe, then that is going to have an effect on consumer sentiment. If people have less money in their pockets and their perspective about the future is rather dimmed, and not least in the UK because of the uncertainty with regard to Brexit, then they're less likely to go out and make big ticket purchases. So that is, I think, something that is really quite deeply affecting Europe. And what it does suggest is that the potential for the ECB to raise interest rates is at least pushed back into 2020 and potentially longer than that. That it's very hard to imagine how on earth the ECB could justify raising interest rates when their one, and in fact, their only official mandate is to achieve an inflation target of close to, but not exceeding, 2%. And they are nowhere near achieving that goal. So it's unlikely the ECB is going to be raising rates anytime in the foreseeable future, but that does not solve for the liquidity question. This has been a massive liquidity fueled bull market over the last almost 10 years, and now we're coming to the end of the liquidity infusion. So then stock markets and asset prices generally are going to need another reason to keep going. And if the liquidity-fueled advance is going to persist, well, we need additional sources of liquidity. So that is unlikely to come from the bond market in the short term, particularly with yields starting to fall. So the 10-year yield now is right, or excuse me, price is back above the trend mean, and as long as it's holding this 120 area, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Now, that's against a background where there is ample additional supply coming into the market, and yet we're starting to see these yields contracting. Well, that is very, I think, clearly stating that there is some flight to quality going on in here. The relative performance of the S&P 500 Dividend Aristocrats is certainly something that highlights that demand for a safe haven. And then you also have gold prices. Despite the fact that the dollar was not down in a particularly dynamic manner in here today, gold prices are pushing back up towards this psychological 1250 area. And then we have the Japanese yen, which has been strengthening up. It has at least found near-term support in the region of 114, and it is pushing, the dollar is pulling back now towards the lower side of its range. So we certainly have this risk-off moment in here right now. The big question is, what is the Fed going to do on Wednesday? I'm reminded of some of David's Fullerisms, or what he regarded as Fullerisms. The first is the Fed has killed off more bull markets than any other factor combined. So I think that's certainly something we should bear in mind, that what the Fed is going to do is certainly going to have an impact. And it's already had an impact. The question is now whether they can avoid a policy mistake. The really big problems in markets occur when central banks have policy mistakes. It is going to require a very clear about turn by the Federal Reserve to really start to nail home to investors that the Fed has got their back. Generally speaking, new Fed governors get a get a test of their resolve. And this is probably it for Jerome Powell. So if he comes to the rescue of the markets, then the chances are then that we're going to see a low of at least near-term, potentially medium-term significance occur this week. If he fails to come to the rescue of markets, then we could see the breakdown extended, and then it becomes significantly more difficult to repair the damage to consistency characteristics. So we're at a very important Rubicon for this medium-term bull market that's been going on since the early part of 2009 and the late part of 2008 for a significant number of the leading assets. I think that is by far the most important consideration right now. Then you had oil prices in here today closing at a new low for WTI and pulling back to the lower side of the range on Brent, but closing below the $60 area. And this is the first close below $60 since November. It's going to have to be reversed quickly, but it does throw the onus for reducing supply back onto OPEC, and that the market has not been convinced that they've seen enough of supply destruction at these levels. And a clear upward dynamic is going to be required to confirm a return to demand dominance in here. Natural gas prices, having broken down from their range, extended the decline in here today, and that's against a background of warmer conditions. But what it's doing is to confirm resistance at the upper side of this very long-term range. I continue to think that natural gas represents about the closest analog that we have to what we can expect from oil prices in what is essentially a secular bear market. Now, when we look at some of the emerging markets, well, the Nifty index in India was in positive territory in here today, and that's really quite clear. So when we see that, then there is two potential points that need to be highlighted. The first is India generally is not overly affected by what happens internationally because they don't have a big manufacturing sector. But of course, it's the growth of the manufacturing sector is what is likely to drive the secular bull market. So that won't always be the case. But it has got these defensive characteristics when everywhere else is experiencing a degree of volatility. Then the Brazilian market has encountered resistance around that 90,000 level, and it is now coming back towards the succession of higher reaction lows, but it still has a fairly wide overextension relative to the trend mean, and that does look like it is going to get closed. The Indonesian market was in negative territory in here today, and I think against a background where we do have such selling pressure right across markets, then it's likely that we're going to see some consolidation of what has been a standout performance among the ASEAN markets. Now, what this also helps to drive home is that emerging markets don't have the same sorts of troubles. Now, every asset has been affected by massive infusions of liquidity into the global economy over the course of the last decade. But we also have to marry that against the argument that emerging markets have got a very clear growth story. The rise of the global middle class is a very profound event, and that is likely to be confirmed with relative performance in a recovery scenario. But that does not mean that emerging markets will be immune from additional selling pressure. And if we do see Wall Street breaking down, what I think is important to highlight, though, is that Wall Street is not leading in this environment. It is being much more responsive to what's happening in international markets. In that regard, it is not so much a Wall Street leash effect. The epicenters of risk are in China and in Europe, and that's where we see the clearest source of underperformance. So therefore, that is where the problems are. We're certainly seeing some response by Wall Street in regard to the withdrawal of liquidity by the Federal Reserve. But the global economy is being, I think, more heavily weighted by the underperformance of both China and Europe. So there are a number of issues that are appearing at around the same time, and that makes the requirement for an additional liquidity infusion all the more important. It is going to need, we're going to need some form of catalyst in order to derail the selling pressure that is starting to build in a, I think it's an understatement to say starting to build, but that is building in a number of these assets. Now, when we look at, for example, the Australian market, the ASX was in positive territory in here today, and it does have an oversold condition. But the most important thing it's done recently has been to break that sequence of higher reaction lows evidenced since the beginning of 2016. And that's a major trend in consistency. And this has not been the most consistent of trends. When we look at the banking sector in Australia, this is the ASX 300 banks. Well, it's been trending down for over a year and a half already, and it was at a new low yet last week. So that's where we're starting to see some of the pressure coming to build within the Australian stock market. The Aussie dollar has pulled back from the region of the trend mean. The big question now is whether 70 cents is going to hold. And when we look at the New Zealand dollar, then it had been able to push back above the trend mean, but it's also steadying, or at least consolidating here. If it breaks down below the trend mean, that's going to increase the potential that it will relook at the 65-cent level. So, despite the fact that the US dollar index was in negative territory in here today, it certainly wasn't down in a dynamic manner. And I think the clearest big risks are in China and in Europe, but we're also starting to see degradation of uptrends that have been present in Wall Street, and that is not in considerable risk in here right now. So I think everyone is looking at what happens with the Fed on Wednesday, and we'll know a lot more after that. And I think with that, I will leave for today and wish all the best to all of you.